Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
I'm Richard Serrett. Join me on Strange Planet for in-depth conversations with the world's top paranormal investigators, alien abductees, Bigfoot trackers, monster hunters, time travelers, alternative archaeologists, remote viewers, and more.
As I was on the way to Area 51, I was stopping on the side of the road and just taking measurements, and I found this one spot where time slowed down by a fraction of a second. It's not supposed to do that.
From the two big categories, animal mutilations and human abductions, you have to conclude that genetic material is being harvested.
Well, I reached for a rifle, and I turned and looked, and it was already moving away, and it was descending the bluff. There's no way any human could have went down it. It was probably a 75-degree angle straight down, almost.
On Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, we're redefining reality. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not go any further. Turn around, go home.
They ended up doing the whole, like, what you in for? People are going like, oh, I got caught with a knife. One guy even says, I attacked police with a bat. And then it gets to me. And I'm like, I made a meme of my dog doing a Nazi salute. And the thing that was funny was half the prisoners, like, all sort of sat up and went, that was you. And I was like, yeah. And they were all laughing, but then my friend, like, leaned into me and whispered and went, it's all funny here, right? But see, if you do get put in, don't tell people that, because you will get bartered.
On today's show is Mark Meacham, known online as Count Dankula. In 2016, he made a YouTube video showing how he taught his girlfriend's beloved pug, Buddha, to do a Nazi salute, a Sieg Heil, on his command. His command was, gas the Jews. The video quickly went viral, and Mark was arrested and charged with committing a hate crime. He spent time in jail and was fined, a fine he refused to pay. As he'll explain in more detail, Mark was fired from his job and pretty much unemployable by anyone who had Google, which is obviously everyone. However, things have recently picked up for him. Every time he is mentioned in the paper, his YouTube channel grows, and he now has over 100 million views. He also has 250,000 followers on Twitter who enjoy his brand of shock humour, much in line with the initial Hitler dog routine. They're a strange bunch, his followers. When he shared a photo promoting this podcast, many of them followed me and asked if I could send them photos of Mark's penis, or, failing that, my own. I politely declined. I hope some of his followers are here listening today and will stick around. They're part of a strange online world in the dark corners of the web, full of jokes and memes I don't quite understand. But it's not just in the obscure recesses of computer world where Mark has made his mark. He's often talked about by famous mainstream advocates of free speech, including Ricky Gervais, who brought him up once again just last week. I remember when I heard about the dog joke at the time, I imagined a horrible neo-Nazi, so had little sympathy for him, even if it seemed a little strange he was being arrested for a joke. Meacham was later in the UK Independence Party, or UKIP, and had some association with British far-right activist Tommy Robinson and American far-right radio presenter Alex Jones, all of which further convinced me his apple was of the bad variety. He refutes this image and says most of his friends are on the left. He was nice enough to give me his time to do this podcast, so the least I could do was give him a fair hearing with an open mind. We have a bit of a chat about free speech, humour, offence, and where these things collide. Should any joke be illegal? Mark certainly doesn't think so, and I'm inclined to agree. It seems pretty crazy how the whole thing blew up, and a waste of everyone's time and money. That doesn't mean I give Mark a free pass. Just as I believe strongly in his right to make those jokes, I value my right to criticize them and say they're in bad taste. For example, a recent video he posted mocking the Beirut explosion might be particularly hurtful for people who've just lost loved ones. It may not be illegal, but I consider that worthy of criticism, at the least. And he's perfectly entitled to tell me he doesn't care. We do get distracted while talking about the Nazi pug incident and end up waffling about free speech for a while, before coming back to his arrest and jail time at the end. Which is fine, because you always listen to the end anyway, don't you? Next week is a chat with controversial American scholar James Lindsay, who has pretty much blown up Twitter by claiming that 2 plus 2 equals 4. In an Orwellian turn, thousands of left-wing academics have been suggesting the equation actually equals 5. But for now, we're in Scotland with Count Dankula discussing whether jokes and fried Mars bars are offensive. We were in Edinburgh and everyone was very offended when I asked people if I could have a fried Mars bar.
Edinburgh is technically not Scottish. They're probably the most like hated place in Scotland, even though they're the capital city. Everybody sort of sees them as poncy, posh people that don't really meld with the rest of the country.
Yeah, that's why there was no fried Mars. I did manage to find it eventually. It was basically a heart attack on a dish. It was ridiculous, but it's the best thing I've ever had in my life.
It's the reason our life expectancy is like 45. So,
yeah. You're doing all right then. I mean, because you must be what, in your 30? Are you about my age? That I'm 31.
I'm 32.
Yeah, you're getting on, mate. You're getting on a bit.
Yeah. I'm actually 14. This is just what Scotland does to you.
Have you ever met Ricky Gervais?
He's tweeted about me, but yeah. I've never actually met the guy.
Doesn't shut up about you, does he?
This man's passionate about freedom of speech, so, you know, it's a good thing. I'm happy that he's always talking about it.
You're like a massive thing, personality now, because you've got a huge Twitter following, massive YouTube following. What was it I saw you announced yesterday? Was it 100 million views?
Yeah, it was just yesterday I broke 100 million views and I'm over 750,000 subscribers. So, you know, nearly at the 1 million.
It's insane. So a lot of people know who you are now, but for my dad, could you tell me a bit about your sort of story? What happened? Was it 2018 with your dog?
2016.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, it was basically a case of me and my girlfriend were living together. She had this little cute pet pug called Buddha, who got his name because when he was a puppy, he was really fat.
Yeah.
And she was always going on about how cute and adorable he was. She would even like pick him up and like shove him in my face going, look how cute he is. Look at that little face. And I'm just kind of like, fuck off. I'm trying to watch TV. But ended up one day, I was giving him a treat and he would lift his little paw up to give you a paw so that he could get his treat. And a part of me went, ah, that kind of looks like a little salute. And then I had a bit of a light bulb moment. And then I decided to begin some alternative training. And instead of him giving a paw for a treat, I taught him to lift his paw whenever I say Z-Kyle. And I also taught him to react very happily whenever I say the phrase "gas the Jews."
Fucking hell!
And the whole it only took about like 5 days to do it, but the problem was he didn't do it every single time. Like it was still early stages in the training. So what I was doing was I was filming some clips of him doing it, and I was compiling it all together in a YouTube video. And me and my girlfriend have nights where we would sit and watch YouTube videos. And everything. What I was going to do was put it on my YouTube channel. And then one night when we were watching YouTube videos, I was going to go, oh, I know a great video. and then just stick it on and totally blindside or totally catch her off guard. The problem was we never had a YouTube night, but I uploaded it on my channel for my friends to see. Like my channel only had 8 subscribers and those were people that I all knew. They were all my friends. And No date night happened, so never got to show the video. But then I went to Iceland for a gaming convention, and it was while I was actually on the plane going to Iceland. Someone, to this day, still don't know who, somehow found the video and posted it on Reddit, and it ended up on the front page of Reddit.
So at the time, you say you only had 8 subscribers?
8, and they were all people that I knew. They were all my friends.
And so it
must have taken off on Reddit. Were people originally pissed off? Because Reddit's quite a, you don't know what you can get with that. It could go either way, right?
Yeah, it was like, I would probably say about 90% of the people saw it for what it was, a joke, and found it funny. And then you had the other 10% who were being little crybabies about it.
So when I first heard that, I remember hearing that news story. The assumption is, and we shouldn't make assumptions, I think, and that's what I guess we have to learn to do as we get older as part of being a more mature person, is to not make an assumption about someone. But you do imagine somebody who really wants to gas the Jews. Was that your intention at all?
No, not even a little bit, no. Basically, the point of the joke was that this little, cute, adorable, innocent animal was reacting happily and doing things that were absolutely horrifically vulgar while having no idea that that's what it was doing. That was part of the joke. I've had a lot of people making the arguments that I was trying to convey some anti-Semitic message, like a dog whistling, you know, pardon the pun, out to my followers. And this is the thing, is I know how to make content, I know how to write content. If that's what I wanted to do, I can assure you I could have made something better than that.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be dog whistling, would it? Aside from the dog pun you mentioned, but it would.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no secret message in Gas the Jews. I mean, so what were you doing at the time for work and stuff?
I was working in a call center, and I was also doing a private security.
Okay.
As well, and what happened was when I was in Iceland, because I was in a foreign country, I wasn't connected to the telephone network or anything like that, and I ended up like going out, met up with my friends while I was there, went out, got drunk in Reykjavik, had no idea that back home the newspapers were blowing up, the internet was blowing up. And the next morning when I woke up in my hotel room, I went to check my phone and went, oh yeah, I'm still not connected. But then the hotel had Wi-Fi. So I connected to the hotel Wi-Fi, and as soon as I did, my phone just blew up. It was just rapid fire notifications, and I was just like, what the hell is going on? And then I had a bunch of voicemails from my wife, who called me, you know, while the notifications were flying on my screen. And she basically said, why are there reporters at the door?
Was a tiny bit of you excited?
Not really. A part of me kind of went like, oh fuck, because I'd never experienced anything like this before.
Yeah.
So it was more confusion. I didn't really know how to deal with the situation.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of like, what's going on? Like type of thing, you know, sort of, what do I do?
Yeah, because I feel like there's a tiny part of me that almost wants to say something shocking and controversial on this podcast so that it takes off to such an extent and my phone starts beeping all night. But then I don't want what happened next to you to happen. So, yeah, continue, please.
Yeah, but it was basically a case of, the reporters came at the door and they sort of explained, you know, the video's gone viral and they wanted to speak to me, and they could tell that I was a nice guy and they just wanted to get my side of the story. And this is my first time ever dealing with the press, you know. I didn't know how they worked, to see all the usual tricks that they use, like, you know, this was my first time dealing with them. So I was an idiot and I believed them. And, you know, even my wife even let them into the house and made them cups of tea and like all this type of stuff. And then the next day it was just a complete hatchet job, you know. It was, they were calling me a Nazi, calling me an anti-Semite, saying I was far right, and just all the usual, you know, lies that continue to this day.
That's something that I've always struggled with as a journalist, I think. Because sometimes you do speak to really bad people, and I'm not saying you're one of them, but sometimes you speak to bad people, and it's very, that is the thing as a journalist. You can't tell them, I think you're a bad person, can I interview you? So you do have to sort of, you have to compromise your integrity a little bit. And I think sometimes the journalists are the bad people themselves, if I can be so blunt about my own profession.
I learned my lesson at that point, and I had a lot of big people on YouTube and everybody all contacting me, and they said, rule number one when you're involved in any kind of controversy, do not speak to reporters. Do not speak to them like they'll come in and pretend that they're on your side, and I'll be able to tell your side of the story. Like, this person just wants their paycheck. They don't care what happens to you. Like, this person could write an article that could absolutely annihilate your life. They don't care. They just want to get their paycheck. They want their brownie points with their boss. So by that point, I'd learned, and I was just telling them to get lost. And then I think that happened for a couple of days after I came back from Iceland. But what happened was, word got around the estate about what the reporters were doing, and the local youths saw to it that reporters couldn't come into the estate anymore. But then what happened was, I think it was about maybe, so for about 3-4 days, there was no reporters in the estate. And then the police came and knocked at the door. But at the time the police came and knocked at the door, the reporters were there. Because I can't say how I know this, but the police illegally tipped off the reporters that they were coming to arrest me.
Why can't you say how you know that?
Because I just can't.
You got an insider?
No, nothing like that.
Why would the... That means it is that. Why did the police... why would they do that to sort of have more against you, I suppose?
Perp walk. That's what it was. It was
what does that mean?
It was to get photos of me coming out of the house with the handcuffs on, because the police, whenever the police do that to a criminal, they believe it's, you know, good PR. But in this case, it was not good PR. Everybody was railing against the police for it. People still to this day, like, whenever the police get mentioned in Scotland, you know how the whole, whenever someone gets arrested, they go, why don't you guys fight real crime?
Yeah,
type of thing. Like, people will make jokes going, oh, why are you here? Did I post a joke on the internet?
Sure.
You know, yeah. Like, yeah. It was not good PR for them. Not at all.
Yeah. But I guess you're saying, like, you learned your lesson about speaking to the press. But firstly, you're speaking to me and I'm sort of press. Not really.
Yeah.
Why are you speaking to me?
It's because I know what to do now.
Okay, fair enough. And then secondly, it's done all right for you though, hasn't it? You had 8 followers and you got about a bazillion.
Well, that's the thing is, for the first like 2 years after that, it was not great at all. I got immediately like fired from all my jobs. And every time I tried to get a new job, like there was a few things that would happen. I would either get recognized in the interview and they would just tell me, no, you're not coming in. Or I would get hired and then sometimes on the first day or after a week, they would realize who I was. And then I would get fired, or I would get a job, actually manage to hold the job. And sometimes the manager was very cool when he's like, don't worry, like just keep it down that you're here. And somehow far left activist groups would find out where I was working. And then they would call and harass the employer into firing me.
I can't imagine far left groups fighting to being annoyed at someone doing an anti-Semitic joke.
That's one thing that I have noticed about the far left. There was one event that I was doing, and we get all types of people at our events. And I was just sitting there having a pint, and I was ending up talking to a guy. And he started talking about, you know, the Jewish media, the Jewish banks, the Jewish this, and Israel. And I'm sitting there just kind of like, all right, okay, you're one of them.
Yeah.
And then I started talking to him about Richard Spencer, and then the guy went off, fuck him, he's a Nazi. And I was like, what do you mean? And he went, no, he was like, I'm in Labour. And I was like, what?
It wasn't George Galloway, was it?
No, it wasn't George Galloway. No, but this was just some random guy at one of my events. But I was just completely taken aback, because see whenever they start talking about Jews, the far left and the far right are indistinguishable.
Yeah.
When you bring up Jews,
seems like it. But yeah, so people were calling up. That's awful. Have you read John Ronson's So You've Been Publicly Shamed?
Everyone's told me to, but I haven't actually read it yet.
Yeah. No. Okay. It's just loads of examples of cases like yours, I suppose.
Yeah, he followed me on Twitter quite recently.
Did he?
Actually. I don't know if he's doing a follow up book or something, but yeah.
God, maybe he'll see this. I'll tag him on the Twitter thing, because he also did the psychopath test, which I just did it. Did you see? I don't know if you saw last week. I did it on this podcast. It was an interview with a psychopath.
I think you mentioned something about that. I've not actually seen it yet. No, no.
You gotta check that out, man. It's insane. Not somebody else I spoke to was saying, hang on, you had a psychopath on. Is that what does that mean? I am, like, I'm not just speaking to people who I think are psychopaths, but but yeah. So you couldn't keep a job. I mean, that is a bit shitty.
That was the part. It was just. This was the thing is, like, see how where I am on YouTube right now and where I am with political activism. This was the reason that all of this happened, is because after Nazi Pug happened, I just went, okay, whatever, it's done, it's finished now. I just want to get on. I just want to get on with stuff now. And basically I was trying to get on with stuff and couldn't get a job anywhere. We were having to live just off my girlfriend's wage. Mm. We were struggling to pay bills. I had to borrow money from my mum and dad. And everything like that. And I was depressed as shit. I was just kind of like, okay, this is me forever now. I'm not allowed to work. And because I had so much free time, I went, I'm just going to continue on YouTube. And by that point, a lot of big people had contacted me, like Sargon of Akkad and Alex Jones and everything. And they just turned around to me and said, you should make videos. Why not just continue on YouTube? Why not just keep doing what you're doing? They were like, you're not doing anything else anyway. You know, it wasn't even by choice. I wanted to work. I wanted to have a job. And they were like, just make YouTube videos. And then I kept making videos. And then these big guys kept shouting me out. And then from there, people decided they really liked my content. And that's when I started properly. It wasn't until like 2018 that my channel like really blew up. Mm. And I got to where I am now.
What is the key with that? I think a lot of people are building YouTube channels, particularly during COVID and everything. And a lot of people just say it's down to consistency. I mean, was there a moment you say it blew up? So was it like I'm getting a few hundred likes or whatever, and then suddenly there's thousands one day?
It was the key thing was whenever the newspapers wrote a bunch of articles about me again. So basically any time I had a trial date, all of my stats just went flying up. You know, the Streisand effect is a very real thing.
It's an antidote to cancel culture, I suppose, but you have to be able to not have somebody in charge of you. If you can avoid the gatekeepers, I suppose. I mean, if you were working for the BBC or something, that's not going to help you, that kind of press. You'd just be fired and kicked off.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. It's brilliant being on your own. It's absolutely brilliant. See, when you've been cancelled and you've built something completely on your own and you don't answer to anybody. See, all the cancelled comedians are apparently looking into all pulling money together and actually buying like their own venue so that they can never be deplatformed.
It must feel really freeing. I think I even convince myself, I think, some things because I don't want to have the view that would get me deplatformed. Do you know what I mean?
It's assimilation. Basically, you are matching your views with the hive mind because you know the danger of having opposing views to your in-group. Whereas like in our group, we've got people from like all walks of life. Everyone always goes like, oh, look at this picture of Count Dankula with Tommy Robinson and everything like that, like and all that. But it's like nobody knows that the people that I go for beers with and hang out with are literal communists and anarchists.
Okay.
And I've hung around with them a hell of a lot more than I have with Tommy Robinson, but it's the Tommy Robinson thing that always gets mentioned.
Yeah, but they're even worse, the communists.
Yeah, they are. I'm working on that. Whenever I hang around with someone with opposing views, you know, usually after the fourth beer, that's when me trying to convert them starts. I'm like, they're on their fifth whiskey, they're weak. go in for the kill now.
Because you were a member of UKIP for a while.
The reason that the UKIP thing started, it actually all stemmed from people cancelling us. Me and Sargon had like a huge event planned in the Scarborough Spa, the Scarborough Grand Hotel Spa. And we had people coming from Australia, Israel, Canada, America. Everybody was coming to this event. And a week before the event, it was Stand Up to Racism, got the event shut down. And were calling us all like white supremacists and Nazis and all that stuff, which there was Jewish people that came over from Israel. They paid like thousands of pounds for their hotels and their plane tickets. And then because it was a week before the event went live, that they get cancelled, their stuff was non-refundable. And they basically came over here to Britain to find out the thing that they spent thousands of pounds to come and see was cancelled and all of the local papers were calling them Nazis.
Okay.
And so we were just sitting there like, welcome to Britain, boys. You know, like mazel tov. But we decided to all just, we'll go to Scarborough, we'll all just pub it, we'll all just go out to pubs and we'll all have fun, we'll all have a laugh anyway. So we did that anyway. And we were all just sitting talking and we were all just really mad that the event got cancelled. So eventually I was drunk and I just went, you know what, fuck this, I'm sick of this shit. I'm getting into politics, like, to try and like do something at least to try and fix this. And then I was like, what political party has a good free speech clause? And the only one out of, you know, the big ones was UKIP. They were literally the only ones. None of the other primary parties, like Labour actively wants to destroy freedom of speech. The Tories don't care about freedom of speech. They don't even talk about it. It's a complete afterthought to them. And the Lib Dems, they don't talk about it either. UKIP was the only one And I thought, well, you know, if that's my only option, then that's what I'm going to go for.
Hey, it's Andrew. If you're enjoying Heretics, there's another podcast I want to recommend to you, especially if climate change, global conflicts, and an upcoming election are making you feel like we're on the brink of disaster. What Could Go Right is hosted by Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel and executive director Emma Varvalukas. On What Could Go Right, the hosts sit down with expert guests to discuss the world's most pressing issues without resorting to pessimism or despair that we hear so often. Instead, they look back at how far society has come and look forward at what it will take to achieve an even brighter future. Is progress on the way? They may not have all the answers, but on What Could Go Right, they're asking the key questions. Tune in to hear interviews with upcoming guests like writer Coleman Hughes, CNN host Fareed Zakaria, and economist Alison Schrager. If you're looking for a weekly dose of optimistic ideas from smart people, join them every Wednesday on What Could Go Right, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Were you concerned about a lot of the other UKIP people? Every now and then they'd come out and say something. I mean, there's a difference between what you did, which was a joke about the dog.
Yeah.
They were coming out with racist comments every now and then, wasn't it? Bongo Bongo Land was one of them, off the top of my head.
That's just stupid stuff that your grandfather says. Like, that's the problem with a lot of political parties. It's old boomers with old boomer opinions. Like, yeah. You get it in Labour, you get it in Tories, you get it in UKIP, but a lot of the young blood in UKIP were not like that at all. There was one guy that I spoke to who literally still considers all of the Commonwealth to be British citizens.
Oh,
and all that, yeah. He was sitting there like, Indian people are British. Man, so I was like, I did not expect to hear that in UKIP. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, did that put you off at all?
No, it didn't. It was just because there was a few times as well where I made some jokes and people didn't like the jokes I was making, yeah. And I was kind of like, I did not expect this in UKIP, but that's just the way the press goes. They make you think that a group is ultra, super, mega racists, but then when you go in and experience it, I was like, no, it's not like that at all.
Maybe it's like, if you can't identify the racist, then it's you.
Yeah, possibly.
Do you think?
I think it's people that constantly make everything about race and think in racial terms. To me, they're racists because I want to stop talking about it.
I just want to play the devil's advocate, and I suppose we're two white men.
I don't know. Are Scots white? I think the jury's still out on that.
You may be more white than the English, aren't you? You're sort of nearer to Vikings.
Apparently, we've got a lot of Viking blood in us because a lot of when the Vikings came over, a lot of our female ancestors didn't quite run fast enough.
That's funny, isn't it? Because it's something people always do when they look back to their ancestors. They identify with those who were raped rather than the rapers.
Yeah. Yeah, actually.
They're both you.
Actually, yes, true, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much, same. Yeah.
I used to live in Argentina, and in Argentina, they all talk about the Spanish, the horrible Spanish who came over and did this and that to the indigenous people. But most Argentines in Buenos Aires are white. So the people who came over and killed the indigenous people were them. It wasn't they, but they associate themselves with the indigenous. That's the funny thing. Would you still do that joke today? Aside from the fact that it's garnered you a following and everything, but I just mean for the joke's sake.
The joke's been done. Like it was a standard internet meme, and the way internet meme works is when a new meme comes out, it's funny for about 2 weeks and then it dies. But as for like, would I do the joke again after already having done it in 2016?
I mean, had you not?
Had I not done it, would I have done the joke? I would have done it. I mean, if it's new material, it's new material.
I read somewhere that you sort of apologized to some communities and stuff. It suggests there's some remorse about it.
I didn't apologize. I think I was hungover, and like that was during the panic of the initial visit.
Okay.
To my house, and I was like, I do apologize for any offense caused and everything. But then, after a few weeks, I got my balls back, and I just went, you know what? Fuck you. Yeah. I'm not sorry.
It is offensive, though, isn't it? I mean, it's an offensive thing. I mean, your argument is it doesn't matter if it's offensive. I've got a right to free speech, and I shouldn't be arrested. Which we haven't even gone into that yet. I want to find out about what happened then. That's your argument, but it's still offensive, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure there are things that offend you as well, and you could say, well, so what? I got offended, you got offended, we move on. But you still feel bad for doing something that's offended some people, right?
I don't
ever.
Nah, there has been a few times where I've said a joke that was a little bit too far, to people and I have turned around and went like that. See if I know the person and I actually have some respect for them. But basically, if they're being killed and butchered, then I care. You know, whether I know them or not doesn't really matter. Then I deeply care about that. But see if it's someone I don't know, you know, Mr. you know, Smith on the internet. Oh, your joke offended me. I don't care. I don't give a shit. I don't know you.
Yeah.
Like, why should I care? If it's someone that I actually know and I actually do have respect for, then, you know, if I have deeply upset them, then I will apologize to them for it. But whenever I've got like a small army of internet strangers saying, you offended me, I'm deeply offended by that, I'm like, who cares? And you'll be fine in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you're just offended. You know, is this your first time? So, like, you'll be fine. Don't worry. Nothing happens.
Can you think of a joke that would be too much?
See, if I had like a 2-year-old toddler child and I taught them to Nazi salute, I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
I wouldn't do that. It's just whenever it's a child and you're teaching the child to do stuff, whenever you do it to a dog, like whatever, it's a dog. If you're doing it to a child, then to me that would be like too far. I wouldn't do that.
Did you notice a change in the dog's behavior towards minorities after the trick?
He is extremely racist. Yeah. He keeps telling me to read the bell curve. Keeps telling me to look into Oswald Mosley.
Oh my God.
And stuff. He's too far gone. He's too. The thing is, well, you can train a dog, but you can't untrain a dog. So see, whenever he sees anyone eating, he thinks if he walks up to them and salutes, then he gets food.
Is that a party trick? Like when people come over, still they must want to see Buddha do that.
Oh, they do it all the time. Yeah. They'll open like a packet of crisps and he'll just walk up to them and salute because he thinks that means I get one.
The thing is, like, I do think it's a bit of an offensive joke, but I agree with you, like, well, people have a right to do offensive things, I guess, and I would maybe be offended if a friend did that, but then I'd also probably be tempted to get the dog just to see it. If you were my mate and I went over, I'd probably be tempted to do that.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is I've done like lots of Skype calls and Discord calls when I'm hanging out with people, and like I've had like Jewish friends and everything when I've been on webcam, and like Buddha will walk into the room and then they'll all go, oh, make him do it, and everything. I'm like, all right, fine, and I make him do it, and then they all laugh.
Okay.
Because I mean, at the end of the day, it's a dog lifting its paw. He's not goose stepping towards Poland.
Yeah. So we've discussed, I suppose, whether jokes can ever be offensive, but what about things people say? Do you ever get offended on behalf of, say, a minority of some sort or somebody who's, you know, based on something Nigel Farage or Boris or Corbyn or, you know, or anyone has said or done?
I wouldn't get offended because of it. There are very few things that actually like deeply offend me. There are a few things that actually make me angry. But I mean, if someone says something stupid, then I'll call them out on it and say that they're stupid. Like we do a lot of like, you know, edgy and spicy jokes, but like whenever we see someone like saying those things, but not as jokes, they mean the things that they say, then we'll usually just laugh at them and call them an idiot.
Yeah. Okay. And where do your political sort of, what do people say? Your political leanings lie?
Leanings. Socially left, economically right. Okay. Basically, I'm fine for people to do whatever they want as long as they are not infringing on the rights of others. That's fine. If you want to be gay, trans, you want to practice your religion, you want to do any of those things, like whatever, that's, it sounds bad, but basically if you want to be gay and get married or you want to practice Islam or anything like that, I don't give a shit. I don't care. Like I actually care very little about what you do because you're not affecting my life in any way. Yeah. The only time I actually start to care is if you are infringing on the rights of others.
So you're pro, for example, gay marriage, I imagine?
Pro gay marriage, yeah. I don't care. Oh, did you hear that Sam and David are getting married? I don't care.
You wouldn't say that to Sam and David. You'd show them you're excited. I mean, if you've been invited to the wedding.
I would tell them, I can't get the day off, man. That's just because I hate weddings. I don't want to go. Yeah, I don't. It's like, that's not an anti-gay thing. It's an anti-wedding thing.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry, man, can't make it.
Yeah. I'm not. Oh, actually, I was going to say, even that I'm worried about saying. I'm even worried about agreeing with you that I don't like weddings because I'm thinking about friends at home who've invited me to weddings and things like that. I love weddings. I love a party.
So, that's the thing is when it comes to stuff like gay marriage or whatever, I don't care.
Okay.
I honestly, I don't care.
I saw you got BLM in your Twitter handle and everything.
Yeah.
Are you on board with all of that?
No, that's so Twitter don't ban me.
Really?
Yeah, everybody's doing it now. You put BLM in the pride flag in your name and Twitter's little algorithm doesn't pick you up and they don't ban you.
Wow. But presumably you are on board with the idea of black people having the same rights as other people and gay people having the same rights.
100%. I support the message, not the group.
So what happened? You got arrested.
Yes. Got arrested. The cops came to my house and came in. Another mistake. Yeah, you don't let the cops in.
Really?
You don't.
You can say no.
You can say no. They can arrest you at your door, but they can't come into your house unless you run back into the house away from them if they've arrested you.
Okay.
So basically, I let them in. And they says, sure, I think you know why we're here. And I was like, yeah, I've got a rough idea. And the cop just matter-of-factly went, well, we're here to arrest you. And I just started laughing and went, okay. And I went, can I get changed first? So I went in and I'm getting changed. The whole time I'm getting changed, I've got like the male officer like watching me. But like the reason for that is to make sure that I don't have like a weapon hidden in my drawers that I'm going to use or something. So like that's fair enough. But while I'm getting changed, the female police officer is going around my house taking pictures of everything, like every room, taking pictures of like my computer and all that type of stuff. And then ended up, I get handcuffed, I get led outside and all the reporters were there waiting to take pictures of me. And then I get taken to the cells and I get told because my crime was classed as a hate crime, I was going to be kept in jail until my next court date, which fortunately was the very next day. And I never even get taken into the courtroom. The judge just gave an order to free me.
Wow. Did you stay the night then in jail?
I spent the night in jail, but that's fine. I mean, I've been in a few drunken bar fights a few times. So
have you?
Yeah, I've been. I'm Scottish.
What's the bed like in jail?
It was probably about a 2-inch thick mat on the floor.
On the floor? That's just degrading. That's awful. That's what I always think of, because in the movies, they often, you have those little bunk beds and like Shawshank and stuff, but then you've got, often it's just like a concrete floor. And I don't remember ever seeing like a bed, or like a bedside table where you can plug your iPhone in.
There was nothing in the cell with me. It was just the bed. And I did ask for a book. And I think he gave me one of Reggie Cray's from the Cray's Twins books. And all that, which I was like, okay, apt.
Yeah.
But I read a little bit of that and I just went to sleep.
Wow. Were you like, how did you feel at that point? Scared?
No, I was all right. Like, I guess because I'd been in the cells before. I knew the script, but there was a funny story actually while I was in there. There was one guy, I remember getting like woken up late at night by like a guy like screaming, a guy just screaming the house down, and I looked out. There's a little porthole at the front of the door, and I looked out, and I could just vaguely see about like six cops like wrestling with this one guy to get him in the cell, and they put him in the cell and slammed the door shut, and he's sitting screaming, going, "I've ruined my life, I've ruined my fucking life," and everything, and I'm trying to sleep, and he kept screaming, so I started kicking my door and punching the wall, shouting at him, saying, shut the fuck up, trying to sleep, because other prisoners were shouting at him as well. Mm-hmm. He then starts punching the wall and kicking his door and shouting at me. So then I just sat and I just sort of like put my t-shirt around my head to like try and drown out his screaming. And then the next day I was like, who was that fucking idiot that you put in next to me last night? And then the cop went, oh, he murdered his friend. I was like, oh, okay. Making friends already.
He murdered his friend for telling him to be quiet at night.
It's probably, but it's fine. There was a concrete wall between us. Wow. I'm sure I'll be all right.
Maybe the biggest lesson to take from this whole experience for you is if you ever get arrested, bring earplugs.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, well, you're not allowed anything in the cell with you. You're not
what, even earplugs?
Not allowed your shoes, not allowed laces, not allowed belts in case you Epstein.
Yeah,
yourself and all that, but like you're not allowed anything in apart from your clothes and a book. Yeah,
I'd bring earplugs. They're not stopping me bringing. You know what? I'm just not going to commit a crime because I couldn't put up with that.
Yeah, nah, but that was the thing. Is the next day I get handcuffed to, like, you had your legs cuffed, you had your arms cuffed and onto your waist, and then I got loaded.
Your legs get cuffed?
Yeah, I got loaded onto a prisoner transport van as well to get taken to the court.
Like Hannibal?
While I was there, I actually saw a friend of mine. We were getting led onto the truck, and the truck has got, like, little sealed pods inside it that you get put inside you're getting taken to prison. And while I was walking past, I heard someone go, "Oh, Marcus, how you doing?" And I looked through the little window and it was one of my friends. And I was like, "Oh, fuck, man, how you doing?" Like that. But,
what was he arrested for?
He slashed someone's face with a machete.
He didn't.
Oh, no, he did. He did it. And I'm not going to say his name, but he done it. I completely believe that he done it. But it ended up, like, I was in court the next day, and that's when we get put in the big, like, holding cell.
Yeah.
Where there was probably about, like, 12 of us. And this little, like, it was a really small room. It was a really small room. And it was like 12 of us in there, and people are trying to sleep and lie on certain parts and everything. And they ended up doing the whole, like, what you in for?
Okay.
Type of thing. And it's going around everybody in the room.
One Breakfast day. Club.
Yeah, pretty much. But people are going like, "Oh, I got caught with a knife." One guy even says, "I attacked the police with a bat." And then it gets to me. And I'm like, I made a meme of my dog doing a Nazi salute. And the thing that was funny was half the prisoners, like, all sort of sat up and went, "That was you." And I was like, yeah. And they were all laughing. But then my friend, like, leaned into me and whispered and went, "It's all funny here, right? But see, if you do get put in, don't tell people that, because you will get bartered."
Or because Nazi is like a bad word.
No.
Because it's not hard enough.
It's not hard enough. I look weak.
Yeah,
okay. Like, type of thing. So yeah, people would kick my head in.
What would you have said? I beat up a dog.
Yeah, I beat up
homeless.
Yeah, I would have said armed robbery or something like that. I would have said, armed robbery. I get caught. I'm actually a drugs kingpin. Don't fuck with me. type of thing. Yeah.
That's quite a funny story.
They released me, but then that was the beginning of my trial. And I think I had a total of, like, 9 trial dates, and that went on over the course of 2 years.
Yeah.
And just some of the stuff that the prosecutor was saying, the prosecutor went in, like, so hard. He wasn't... Prosecutors just want to win, right? Prosecutors don't give a shit if you're guilty or innocent. Like, their job's to prove you that you're guilty. He was saying that I unironically, like, I actually wanted to kill people. He was saying stuff like that. He tried to, halfway through the trial, get my charge raised to a more serious one, where instead of the maximum sentence being 1 year, my maximum sentence would have been 5 years. This guy was actually trying to get me 5 years in prison for this joke. And he was just, but see, when it came to me head to head with the prosecutor, like, I absolutely wrecked him. And I, but, you know, still found guilty. I said to my lawyer, "No matter what punishment the judge gives me, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. If he gives me a fine, I'm not going to pay it. If he gives me community service, I'm not going to do it. If he gives me prison, then it's kind of hard to argue against that. They just pin you to the ground and take you away." But the judge went, £800 fine. But the funny thing is, I was trying to get jailed. I was trying to basically, like, make a statement.
Yeah.
I was wanting to show people that I'm prepared to go to jail for what I believe in, freedom of speech. It's a human right and everybody deserves it. You shouldn't be arresting people and putting them in prison for jokes. However, I didn't tell my wife about my plan.
Yeah, I was wondering that. Was this just an excuse to get away from her, a little holiday?
No, that was the funny thing is, like, while my lawyer's reading out the statement and I'm standing there in front of the judge, I can actually feel her eyes burning into the back of my head. And but then I got handed the £800 fine. I went out the court to people cheering and all that type of stuff. And she did the good thing. She was smiling and all happy for the cameras and the press and everything. But see, as soon as we were alone, she went fucking apeshit going, "You were trying to get jailed. You were trying to go to prison." I was like, "Yeah. Because if I told you my plan, you would have said no." As soon as I got fined £800, I donated £800 to a children's hospital. just to sort of say, I have the money. Yeah. Like, I'm just not gonna fucking pay it.
Yeah.
Eventually, like, I was getting the threatening letters from the police, like, you know, pay the fine by this time, pay the fine by this time. If you don't, we're gonna come and get you. And I just went, nope. I even made a video baiting them, like, I'm not paying this fine, come and get me then. And what the cops did instead is they seized the money straight out of my bank account.
Wow.
And they're supposed to tell you. I never got any of that. The funds weren't even frozen. Just in the space of one day, boom, they took the money. And I think the reason that they did that is because they knew that if I knew they were coming, I would just empty the account and, like, close the account.
Right. I want to get something out of you. Some remorse.
None. None at all. I would do it again.
It's got to be something. Come on, there's got to be something. I want to end on remorse here.
There is none.
I need us to have gone on a journey in these 70 minutes. I need us to, there's a journey, and we've both learned a lot. And no, it's not happening.
Nah, it's not happening. Nah, I don't regret the joke at all.
Man, I think what you did was in bad taste, but you had every right. Yeah, you have every right to
That's an absolutely fair opinion. That's a completely fair opinion. Like, I'm not asking people to find the joke funny. I don't get to decide what people do and do not find funny. That comes down to the individuals themselves. Like, if someone goes, I didn't find your joke funny, fine. Like, I would find it really weird if 100% of people found the joke funny. Like, nobody finds 100% of jokes funny all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, see, I just want people to recognize that it was, in fact, a joke.
You're Count Dankula on Twitter. So dank memes, that's a thing. What is that?
Dank meme is many things. It can be all things. It can be nothing. Uh-huh. A dank meme is basically a meme that has sort of been made, you know, very poorly made, but on purpose.
But a lot of the memes in these circles are quite I suppose offensive for offensive's sake, which again I guess I would agree with your right to do it. There was that one with the smoke from the Beirut bomb singing. But that's going to be, I mean, imagine coming across that. Again, you say you don't mind offending people, but I guess there's got to be a point where you imagine, like, somebody's lost their mother in Beirut or whatever, and then they go on Twitter and see someone's laughing at that.
Well, that's the thing. I don't even know why I did that. I think it was just the absurdity of the explosion made it somehow seem, like, not real and disconnected, because it was like a nuke. And I don't know why. I think just the ridiculousness of it just made me make a joke.
People who are maybe anti those kinds of jokes would maybe imagine that you didn't feel the same empathy. That's what this is. It's a battle of who's got the most empathy, isn't it?
Making jokes about bad things isn't the same as being happy that those bad things happen. And that's the thing. Like, say, for example, I made jokes about the Holocaust. I made jokes about the Beirut explosion. Like, see if you put a big red button in front of me that says, push this to stop the Holocaust or push this to stop the Beirut explosion, I would push the button.
Do you feel emotional watching what happened in Beirut?
Like, because it's an explosion, it's a big boom, it's ridiculous. Like, I was just sitting there, like, I was more amazed. I was just like, fucking hell, look at that thing. Seeing videos of, like, the families, like, crying and everything and searching the rubble and stuff, that shit, no, I don't find that funny. That stuff gets to me.
There's something about the word stupid in a Scottish accent. Stupid! It sounds brilliant, and I'd like to thank Mark Meachin, or Count Dankula, for saying it a few times, and for being a guest on my show. He spoke very eloquently about the nuances of free speech, and in a world that currently trades on perceived and performed morality, I don't want to fall into the trap of presuming I have more empathy for oppressed people and victims than he does, because that would be a very unempathetic thing to do. The truth is, we don't know what's going on in the minds of other people and can only judge from their actions and words. I do think he goes too far. I do think that making light of some really horrible situations for other people in order to gain laughs and likes is not the epitome of grace and decorum, and might even add to the pain of those that are suffering. That said, we can't live in a world where a joke, no matter how awful, gets you arrested. On an unrelated note, I was pleased to see that he does feel sympathy for the victims of Beirut. So he seemed okay, right? Maybe? Anyway, Come back next week where I'll be speaking to James Lindsay, the anti-woke scholar. He is a colleague of Helen Pluckrose, who was on this podcast just a few weeks ago. And that's a really great interview. It's already recorded and will be out next Monday.